So we're focusing on our client, ourselves, the client and ourselves, that relationship, and also the wider context in which we all exist.
Hello, welcome to The Seasoned RD, a podcast connecting newer professionals in the field of eating disorders
to those of us who have been around for a while. I'm your host, Beth Harrell, a certified eating disorders registered dietitian and supervisor.
And I'm Abby Brown, a registered dietitian who is newer to the field.
I think of myself as a well-seasoned cast iron skillet with wisdom and experience, yet always ready for something new.
And I think of myself as an Instapot with innovation and a fresh perspective. This podcast brings both to the table to share ingredients, recipes, and techniques of past and present so we can all be our best for the future.
The kettle is heating up. The skillet is on simmer. So join us around the table for true professional nourishment. Abby, ready to stir the pot?
Let's do it.
This is part two on dietitians getting supervision to help themselves get the skills to supervise other dietitians. And I met a lovely dietitian recently in a consult group, and her style of helping anyone in the room and in presenting the cases that she presented was really, really, really great. And she shared with the group that she owns a group practice and has been supervising other dietitians, but doesn't feel as skilled in the supervision of other dietitians as she does in doing her own work. That is exactly what this course is. It's a skills course for dietitians specifically. And I love the opening soundbite on this part two, where Fiona Sutherland of Australia says, "We are focusing on our client, ourselves, the client and ourselves relationship, and also the context in which we all exist." So please enjoy part two. And as a reminder, this is sponsored by Beth Harrell's My MNT membership. For anyone, it can be for professionals or anyone. And we rotate through a medical, a nutrition, and a therapy topic, and we're switching a couple things up over the summer. So stay tuned with that, also with the podcast. And then the supervision freebies, and that's for therapists, dietitians, and medical providers. We have had some medical providers show up in some of the freebie topics, and you can check that out in the show notes. They are exactly what they sound like, which is a free 25-minute, once a month live connection with an expert that I have picked on a topic that I think you as a professional would love. And then my consult groups are January through June and July through December. Of course, the January through June is filled, but whenever the July through December opens up, you will be the first to know if you are in the freebies list, which is, again, free. Okay, take care and enjoy the rest of the conversation.
So I know Fee and I have walked away from these workshops just feeling like, yeah, we're on to something here.
You are on to something here.
We feel really good.
Yeah. Well,
and everybody else is feeling really good too. Yeah.
Yeah. I've had people say, "Beth, this is so you. You need to attend one of these at some point." And you have repeat dietitians who come time after time. They're already out there doing the great work. And they just want to hone in. But also, I'm using two words that were brought up. I think, Lisa, you used the word heart, put your heart in the work, and then just now love. And I'm going to add my two of the validation and connection. Like to be, this is, I mean, I think that the expression of an eating disorder, I mean, we know there's genetics and environment, but that the expression comes from the biggest root is probably shame. And the biggest healing is connection. So it's having trust with one another and being vulnerable and having that validation that this is hard work. I just want to crawl into your your workshop right this minute. And I'm smiling when you said Boston, because my family is actually from Massachusetts and came to the Midwest before I was born. They had the first 7 children, and I'm the 10th of 11. So I was born in the Midwest, but my parents and my older siblings were from Massachusetts. So I would love to come to Boston.
Yes, Boston can be a very warm city.
It can be, not in the winter. But we're talking May and June, right? These are happening.
Yes, yes. And it's relationally warm, even if it's cold in temperature. You know, and you mentioned something before, Beth, and Fee and I have talked about this. There's a couple of words that people get stuck on. One of them is actually the word supervision, because it can mean things, you know, different things to different people. And it could be a boss, it could be, you know, someone who's their manager. And so, you know, trying to help people understand that the concepts of supervision are really about that kind of validation and support. They're not about criticism, they're not about judgment, like taking that all out of the equation, really looking at how do we support the concepts of, you know, just positive regard for themselves, for their clients, really looking at a worldview that is full of strength and connection and creativity and curiosity and competence, right? Just overall competence. So that framework is the one that we want to use for supervision, as opposed to kind of correction. And then the other word that we've come across in our trainings that people have a little hiccup with is feedback. So the idea in supervision is that you are, you know, obviously offering at times some sense of accountability, but it's the accountability within that framework of connection and compassion and curiosity and shared learning, right? Rather than criticism.
Oh, thank you so much for that. And bringing in Tara McGregor's work, I mean, in the show notes, definitely we are going to include how to sign up. So let me ask, if I was going to sign up today and I wanted to do the Boston one, it's the online first, is that correct? And then the in-person?
That's right. Okay. We have two and a half hour online pieces that we'll do together live. And then we'll do one full day in person.
Okay. You know, and then hotels are you at a place where people can stay, or what's that about?
So there are plenty of hotels nearby. We're right downtown in Boston. The Renfrew Center has been incredibly generous and allowed us to come in and use their spaces. There are, in the past, we usually send out a list of people who are local. If they're, you know, people want to share their home and open that up to individuals coming in. We are following the Meta Conference. So the Meta Conference is on Thursday and Friday, and then we'll be on Saturday. So people who are coming in for that conference might want to just stay for that extra day. Yeah. And then Fee, you have the dates in Austin and then also in Seattle, right?
In Seattle.
Yeah, so Seattle is at the Bellevue Club, which is just outside central Seattle. That does have accommodation. And Austin is at the University of Texas, Austin campus. So again, another very central location. So we really try to be thoughtful about people's what they're going to need, you know, and not only accommodation, but also proximity to transport and ease of access. And we're really aiming to, you know, dial up the thoughtfulness of our for our participants, so that everybody is really getting that sense of, you know, from the very earliest contact we have with people, that they're really getting a sense of role modeling what supervision is, you know, that it does bring with it a heart, that it does bring with it thoughtfulness and consideration for each other. And so that's something that Lisa and I feel really strongly about, is that, you know, when we can really bring the spirit of supervision from the very first contact we have with people, that it it really reverberates with those ripples that Lisa spoke about before, and that we can that we too can make those important contributions and invite others to do the same, so that people, when they are, you know, offering their supervision services, that they can describe it in a way that feels inviting to people. We touched on this really briefly, but it's not uncommon that people have had pretty awful experiences as a student, as a learner, you know, even in what has been named for them as supervision. And maybe it has been in the workplace, maybe it hasn't been in the workplace, maybe it's been obligatory, maybe there hasn't been good consent processes in place. And so Lisa and I, and, you know, so many others, have started having some important conversations about the role of supervision in repair, in relational repair. Because if there's one thing that our field and our profession needs, it's a whole bunch of repair. And we really do see supervision as being pivotal to that. It is such a beautiful space where some really deep and meaningful repair can happen, not only just between two people, but much more collectively as well. So I just see that the layers of the gifts of supervision have incredible potential for our field, because we're, you know, things have been and continue to be pretty fractured. You know, if there is a way that we can do this through a professional practice, and as you can just hear, as the way Lisa and I talk, we're extremely passionate about the multidimensional role that supervision can have and the importance of good supervision.
Yes,
and that requires good supervision. And that requires some orienting to some frameworks and to ways of being that can perpetuate these ripples and can perpetuate the spirit that we're aiming to really bring into our field and into our profession.
Yeah. I was thinking about, you know, what keeps dietitians from participating in supervision. And it used to be, a long time ago, I thought it was a financial piece. And I used to offer supervision to dietitians at, you know, way below cost, a sale on supervision, so to speak. And it really, I don't think it was that. I think it was they just didn't understand the benefits to their practice, to their own kind of well-being, you know, to how it could benefit the field as a whole. And so I think the more that we have conversations and get the message out there about what supervision is, I think there will be more people who are willing to engage in it. You know, Marcy and Fee and I came up with core elements of our supervision process, and they're self-reflection, support, you know, obviously skills and knowledge, and then the spirit, right? Having all of the ways in which we've been speaking about the developing the compassion within ourselves and for each other, and opening up to that kind of curiosity and deep listening and empathy, all the things that we know form that kind of safety in a relationship, that trust that allows someone to really explore what their learning edges are and then have that contribute to their therapeutic work. Yeah, I'm a tremendous fan, and I just feel so incredibly fortunate to have this partnership with Fee and to go out and do this work.
I have two questions for you. Just because not everyone knows what META means. Lisa, you use that acronym, if you wouldn't mind describing it, because I've learned about it over the years and I just have never been able to go.
Yeah.
And that reminds me of why I can't do the Boston training, because I can't. Anyways, what is that?
So META is MEDA. It's an acronym for Multi-Service Eating Disorders Association. It used to be the Massachusetts Eating Disorder Association, but it has become more national. So now it's multi-service. And they've been a tremendous support for dietitians. They have been in the social justice realm. They have been, you know, when it was difficult for me to find a professional organization that would support my philosophy, they were there. So
thank you. Yeah, I've heard great things. And the other thing is, to get move away from a little bit of the woo-woo, give me an example of repair, because we know that there are and have been and will continue to be people who do supervision for the money, mm-hmm. and who may not invest in themselves and who have done harm. So can you give me an example of a dietitian, what you might need to do, an example of what happens or what can happen that needs repair?
Well, I guess, you know, in it repair can be in so many ways. And the way I mostly think about repair is relationally and through feeling safer. Through feeling safer to show up, feeling safer to speak, to express, to explore, to reflect. And in my experience, many dietitians have not felt safe in their collegial relationships, in their workplaces. They haven't felt safe to express themselves or to explore or to take risks or to have the kinds of conversations that can really truly lead to growth. And so when this has been people's experiences, whether that's been as a student or a graduate, the kind of repair that we're talking about is creating a relational space where more is possible, where there is space that is held in safety. And what I mean by safety is that from the very beginnings of supervision, we clarify our purpose for the work and we clarify our intentions. We set up what's called a contract or an agreement on what we're doing together. And that in and of itself creates like a holding space for where really good work can happen. And over time, because this is not something that happens, it's the same with our clients. Like when we think about our clients, you know, you can't just kind of raise your hand and say, trust me, I'm a dietitian. You know, the trust is earned. And that in supervision, when it's done well and where safety, relational safety is prioritized and we are patient, that any kind of ruptures that have happened in the part in a dietitian's previous learning experiences can slowly be mended to the point where the dietitian can feel much more confident and can feel much more like they can lean into their innate competence. And what that sounds like is, I am right where I need to be. I have enough. I don't need to keep grasping for the next education or for the next course, that I've got what I need. I've got people around me that think I'm pretty good. Like what I mean by that is that think I'm a good human and that I have what it takes. And importantly, in supervision, over time and through setting up relational safety really well, which is a part of the workshop that we talk a lot about, is how to set up relational safety, is that dietitians are more willing to have those tougher conversations about a really tricky thing that happened, or that time that I really messed it up, or a decision that I made that upon reflection I don't think was a great decision. Can you help me kind of navigate how to, you know, make a repair even with my client or with
right,
somebody else.
With the client. So I want an example of a rupture that a supervisor may have given to a dietitian that has caused harm and lack of safety that our listeners can relate to. Can you give me one?
There's lots of them. Lisa, you go.
I'm going to let Fee stew on the example while I just say that in my experience working with dietitians, part of the harm is a little bit less obvious in that they're more tentative to really explore and be creative in the process because they're afraid to be wrong, or they're afraid to be out of scope of practice, or, you know, they've felt some condemnation for asking questions or some kind of criticism around that. And so creating that space that feels safe enough to make mistakes is really important.
Right? Huge. There's that safety.
With authenticity, whatever concerns they might have that comes up in the session. And so, of course, you know, dietitians commonly bring in difficult and challenging cases into our supervision process, but they also don't always bring in the things that they're doing really well and the lived experience that allows them to have perspective that's amazing. And so part of a supervisor's job is, yes, to help with rupture and repair, but also to champion them for who they are and all the things they're doing well, you know? So, okay, Fee, do you have an example of a rupture you want to talk about?
Yeah. So I suspect, and this is evidenced, I guess, by lots of conversations I've had with people, when I ask people about their previous experiences as a learner, and I'm quite specific when I ask about that, you know, as a learner in elementary or primary school, in secondary school, in university, what's your experience been as a learner? People will often talk about fear of criticism. They'll often talk about, as Lisa said, fear of getting it wrong. And that fear runs really deep, and it runs right through into university, right through into our profession of dietetics. There is a lot of perfectionism in our field, and a lot of, you know, innate imperfectionism, as the three of us are very well aware, is a fear of wrongness, a fear of not enoughness, and that fear also filters through into supervision. So people are afraid of what could emerge if they take a look inside, or they take a look at their practice. It's such commonplace that we learn through almost like consumption. You know, we've learned through consuming, and supervision is different to that.
Okay.
It is taking in and analyzing, reflecting, stirring around and considering, what does this mean to me? And that has not been people's experience. People have felt demanded of that you need to get this right, that you can't make a mistake, that you certainly can't bring your humanity into it. And I'm noticing this shifting a little bit in dietetics, but in supervision, when we are able to create a partnership and a spirit that all parts of you are welcome here, even the parts that have felt dismissed, that have felt invalidated, that had felt expected upon, that's where the repair is. So the rupture is often around a demand for correctness, and then the repair is all of you is welcome, including the parts that we don't like to look at so much.
Right.
Maybe.
Thank you so much.
And I just want to pick up on something that you just said, Fee, which was really beautifully, I think, organized. And that is, very often in our conversation with our supervisees, there is an element of coaching them to be able to repair that rupture, right? To be able to go back in to a client and be able to say, you know, there was a part of me that got really worried that I needed to deliver an answer in that moment. And, you know, now that I've had a little bit more time to think about it, I want you to know that I rushed to that and I didn't give enough space for us to really consider the possibilities or to consider what was going on for you fully. Or it may be, you know, there's all of these moments when we're role modeling, basically, with our supervisees, what they'll be doing with their client, or sometimes with their boss, you know, or sometimes with their partner, whoever it might be. But that part of us that rushes in to feel like we need to have the answers is so often the rupture. Yeah.
So there's so much I want to say. First, the fear of criticism, the fear of getting it wrong. To all of you dietitians listening, we need you in this space. We need you to develop these connections, to do the repair within yourself so that you can then go and help your client and help future supervisees and more generations, as Lisa had said earlier. So we need you. There's no competition here. I'm amazed when I hear of dietitians who have never heard of supervision. I get that regularly. And so we want and need all of you to hop on this bandwagon, to follow the anchors that are that Fiona and Lisa, along with those who have gone before them, to bring to you. The one thing that you said, Lisa, was scope of practice. That is a common fear of most of the people that I supervise, is am I moving into the realm of therapy? And I think as registered dietitians in the US, we talk about medical nutrition therapy. We are trained to provide medical nutrition therapy. And the MNT, the N is the nutrition. We are dead center with that. We can flex over to looking at labs. We can diagnose malnutrition. We can do formulas and calculations for total parenteral nutrition, for all of that. We can't diagnose medical conditions other than malnutrition. We can flex over to the T, which is the therapy, medical nutrition therapy. As a nutrition therapist, we are talking about the emotions related to and the relation to food, and the relation to others and relation to your support system. So MNT, and our scope of practice moves and ebbs and flows in between the medical, the nutrition, and the therapy. And it's okay. It's okay. I just want to say to you, dietitians, it is okay to flex, just like it's okay for the therapist to talk about food and weight sometimes. And just like we do that, but we're not doing psychotherapy in the way that we are not doing trauma therapy. We are not doing those things. So anyway, scope of practice is a big important piece of it, which I know that you would cover in your training. So the question, as we wrap up, and I knew we could talk for hours. I asked if you had 5 minutes. Do you have 50 more minutes? Okay. I know we're all really busy. But my question that I ask everyone at the end, and take your time with it, is if you could go back to the beginning of your time of supervising others, what do you wish you would have known then that you do know now? It's a big question, because there's been years and lots of practice and lived experience and shared experience and learning from others with lived experience, with more or less experience, like years of experience than yourself.
It's a really good question. And I think the thing that I wish I knew then, that I'm still working on now, is to recognize that, yes, there's always more to learn and there's no rush, because everything you need is inside of you.
Thank you. I just got chills with that. But,
you know, as luck would have it, of course, as so often happens with Lisa and I was thinking very much along the same lines, that I wish I had known, and like Lisa, I continue to be a work in progress. I am still in my own supervision, and I have a supervisor for my supervision, which is such a precious space in and of itself. But I wish that I was more closely connected with self-trust, that I was able to really lean into my own enoughness back then. And that I had enough, especially in the early days. It's, as you both know, it's not actually that easy to be in the earlier waves of things. Mm-hmm. And that a lot of the questioning and the criticism and the risk taking that we all had to do and people before us had to do to an even greater degree meant that we too, you know, had to risk getting it wrong, that we too had to risk making mistakes and all of those things that potentially could have stopped us in our tracks and stopped us from continuing this work. So if I could go back to my younger self, I would say, just keep going, girl. Like, you've got enough for now. There's plenty to learn, but you've got enough for now. So keep on keeping on.
Yes. And to tie in the trio of the different buzzwords that both of you have said, there's no rush and self-trust. So everything is inside of you and I have enough. Part of this podcast is shifting to evolution, our evolution as providers. And even I'm in the Midwest, and so I talk about the ruby red slippers that Dorothy and the Wizard of Oz had. They have always been like, she could just click her heels together, but it was always in her. And it's having the confidence to know we're going to continue to make mistakes, all of us, and that's okay. Bringing the humanity into the room. And by the way, dear dietitians, therapists are just coming around to this too. It used to be leave yourself at the door. Be professional. You can't share. And there are some guidelines on what to share and what not to share if it's in the benefit of your client. Like bringing your humanity in and saying, I just realized I made a mistake here. I'm looking at your reaction and I might have missed something. And it allows them to open up and tell us more. What's in your heart? We can't know that until our client tells us or our supervisee.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for your time. We are going to divide this into two segments. I'm going to make sure that there's links in both segments so that people can hop on the bandwagon right away. Are there any deadlines that we need to know about?
Our first live is on April 25th. There's our first online. Yep.
First online live is April 25th.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And so we want to be signed up by then. Is there a limit to the number of people who can sign up?
Yeah, in a couple of locations, we have room limits. Okay. Boston in particular, potentially, and London too. Those two have room limits, and so we've still got some room, but those two cities could easily fill. The other two are a little bit more flexible. Yeah, obviously online we don't have a limit, but in the room we do.
So don't hesitate. Please don't hesitate. If you're even on the fence a little bit on this, don't hesitate. Hop right in. Thank you, Fiona Sutherland and Lisa Pearl, for your time today. I really appreciate you.
Oh, Beth, thank you so, so much. You are incredibly generous. You are a gift to the world and to our field and profession. We appreciate you so much.
Absolutely. I wholeheartedly appreciate the time that we spent with you.
Thank you for listening. And if you want to connect with me for all things eating disorders and disordered eating from an RD, registered dietitian perspective, there are three ways to do that. One is my membership, and actually two of those ways are my membership. There's a tier one and a tier two, but the membership is for anyone, not only professionals, anyone who wants to join the conversation about medical, nutrition, therapy perspectives floating through my brain, things that I've learned through the podcast, things that I've learned in my 3+ decades of work with all ages. And the membership has monthly content with the two tiers. Tier one is the content and a text community where we can share ideas. And tier two is once per month with a live coffee talk where you can just pop in and say hi, or you can be a fly on the wall and just listen to some ideas related to that month's theme. And then finally, for professionals, I offer small consult groups that run from January to June and July to December, usually therapists and RDs, but I would love to have a medical provider. And I offer individual consultation information.